The After Dark newsletter was started by Art Bell back in 1995, and it's still going strong 13 years later. Call right now to subscribe. It's $39.95 for 1 year and contains a variety of different subjects every month, just like we do here on Coast to Coast AM. There are stories about the supernatural, strange science, human oddities, plus you'll find interviews with frequent guests, my monthly column, and much more. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com.
You never know what you'll hear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
This time period over the next 3 years, I think, could be one of the most dramatic times to live that we have ever witnessed. Beyond tragedies of JFK, beyond the tragedies of 9/11, I'm talking in terms of humanity living in a time period where we could go either way.
What troubles me now, George, is that we seem to come full circle. Today, look at the current sense among the world's modern populations who are standing there saying, we need somebody to come and save us from our spiritual, political, financial chaos. The psychological condition of the world today, if it's not careful, is setting itself up for the dawn of this new world order, which in essence is going to be slavery that we buy into because we are so desperate for somebody to come and save us now.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2002.
Back now to the rocket guy, Brian Walker. Brian, you're back on the air again.
Okay.
This should be an interesting hour with the audience. If you don't mind, we'll just sort of jump right into it.
Okay.
All right. Lots of questions, of course. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Mr. Bell.
Yes, you have noise and crackling on your
phone. I'm sorry. I do have a sound on your phone.
Okay. Well.
I have a five-mile... a guaranteed radius from the phone.
Well, you must be out about 4.5 right now. Anyway, yeah. Do you have a question?
Yes. Excuse me. I'm a little nervous. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
You have an excellent guest tonight. I enjoy your show very much.
Yes, thank you.
This is Mike. I'm calling from the hub of the universe from Boston.
Okay.
And I have to have one comment for Brian. If Evel Knievel ever put all of this thought into any of his, jumps, much less the rocket launch, he would never have gone through it. And I wish you guaranteed success in jumping the bureaucratic hurdle that you're up against.
You've seen the photographs, I take it, of...
I saw some in Maxim magazine last year.
There you are. Okay.
From his backyard.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And balls the size that I can't describe, made out of, brass. I can't. you expect to beat the terminal velocity by re-entering the atmosphere to be able to jump out of the plane at the Earth speed. I mean, terminal velocity has that name for that reason.
Well,
it'll
terminal
kill
velocity.
You if you jump out at 1,000 times Mach 1.
Oh, I won't be, no. The one, the small rocket, the test rocket that I'll be jumping from will not be traveling. That's going much, 15,000 feet, and I will actually exit it in a transitional period when it is actually near a standstill, because the rocket will go up and it'll run out of momentum, and there'll be a point in time where it is actually coming to a standstill before it begins descending.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be coming out of it before it reaches that. I do not plan on leaving the confines of the capsule on the full-size rocket, unless that was the absolute last chance. I've got three basic backup systems in the main rocket, and the last one would be to separate the two halves and get out of the thing. But I have not yet been able to come up with a scenario where I would actually have to do that.
If you did... You, of course, could not do it until you got to an altitude, assuming that you got to 30 miles, and you then had a problem. You would have to get to some minimum altitude before you could take any emergency move at all, wouldn't you?
Well, yes and no. I mean, that there again, that's one of the reasons for having the spacesuit, is that in the worst case scenario, the cabin loses pressure and...
Oh, my God. And you exit the spacecraft at 30 miles?
Well, the...
In that spacesuit, could you... do you think you could survive?
No, I wouldn't go at 30 miles, because the biggest problem I'm going to have from that kind of altitude would be... And you know, when I actually... Last year, when I went over to fly the MiG, I actually met with the guys at the factory that build the Russian spacesuits, and their major problem was, at a certain speed, the materials, of course, begin to melt.
Melt, yes.
So I would have to get to a certain point before I would consider leaving, but there again, that's kind of like the last-case scenario, and I don't plan on even having... I don't plan on getting near that point.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Houston, Texas, and it's funny, last year when you did the broadcast on that fellow that got the tape on the balloon rider.
Oh, did you hear that?
I was actually talked to the fellow the next day.
That was amazing. That was amazing. I'm going to replay it soon. I had just even forgotten about that until it was just mentioned. Then I remembered I had that incredible tape. Anyway, go ahead, sir.
I was curious does he have any fear? Do you have any fear of your relationship with the Russians in going up at an altitude to where, you know, there's things up there looking down on that a lot of people don't see, and I'm just curious if he has any fear of his relationship with another government, just not as a paranoia, but. He does have some intelligence and a technology, and he's going to test something, and he was actually getting right to what I was going to ask, and I understand him departing the ship, but what's going to happen to the capsule when he departs? Does it have a trajectory to land and recover, or is this just a one-time usage? And
Okay.
Well, getting back to that, first of all, I'm not going high enough. You got to realize 30 miles is really not all that far.
It seems pretty far to me.
It just seems very far because it's a long ways to fall. But 30 miles, if you were to pull yourself back away and look at 30 miles above a point, for instance, in Nevada, the center of the state, I'm so far from being able to go anywhere. I'm not in a trajectory that would carry me out of the area. I'm not at an altitude that would allow me to reach to an orbit. There's very little threat to anyone.
What is, by the way, about the lowest altitude one could achieve or would begin to achieve some sort of orbit?
A low Earth altitude is going to be up around 100 miles.
100 miles, about 70 miles above where you're going.
Yeah, I'm a long, long ways from orbit. And of course, the two major components that are necessary for orbit are orbital speed and orbital altitude, both. And I'm a long ways away from reaching an orbital either orbital altitude.
And could never achieve that, even accidentally.
No. Yeah. And to get to a second question, on Earthstar 1, which is the full-size rocket, there's basically the capsule and there's the fuel tank. The fuel tank will jettison when the fuel is expended after 90 seconds, and it has its own recovery system in it. It has its own parachute system, and the capsule itself, there again, I do not plan on departing that capsule
unless
the absolutely
worst happens,
possible thing. And there again, it's very lightweight material. There's not much to it, and the location where I plan to be launching from, it's not going to be posing a threat.
Right.
Well, of a city, that'd be a different story.
Well, of course. Yeah. Do you have life insurance?
Well, no.
No, you don't.
I've never really needed it because not having a family, it's like.
Well, yeah, but of course, all that's changing now.
Yeah, that's just more challenges. You know, life itself is a series of challenges, and that's just going to be one new one to add to the mix.
I mean, is that something that you're going to try to acquire at some point? It would make some sense. I mean, of course, then if the insurance company knew what you were going to do.
Well, you never know. I mean, it could come down to, there again, this is another additional reasons for doing the test rockets and stuff is that I'm using technology that, you know, I have not really invented, per se, anything here. I've been using technology that's been proven
developed.
Developed. there may become a point in time where someone would be willing to write me a life insurance policy for the publicity end of it. You know, a lawyer
well, that's
a
thought.
Type thing.
That's, yeah,
so,
that's a thought.
But there again, this is...
I wouldn't.
Well, I probably wouldn't either. But I have no desire to climb on board something and die in it.
Yes, I'm.
I just won't go in it.
That's clear. That's clear. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Good morning.
Morning, Art.
Hi,
Brian.
Good morning.
Where are you, sir?
Jupiter, Florida.
Okay.
Listening to you on the 610 IOD.
Yes, sir.
I have a. He just answered part of my first question. Are you going actually vertically straight up, or are you, you know, taking a, you know, 90 degrees straight up, or are you going to point it out a couple degrees, or, you know, how much drift are you going to get?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The drift will occur basically depending on what the upper winds are, because, you know, there again, a lot of people have maybe some understandings that are a little bit different than, you know, when I go up, I'm still going to be still rotating with the Earth because I'm right. basically carried by momentum.
Okay.
The time I will be going up, any level that I may pass through with different winds blowing in different directions, I'm going to be traveling through them very quickly, so there'll be very little effect overall. And on my descent, most of the way down from the highest point I reach, whether it's 30 miles or 35 miles, depending on how, you know, how high I go.
Yeah.
Most of that time is going to be coming down very quickly, and once again, I'll be passing through different layers of...
Well, won't you pass through, for example, a place where the jet stream would be if it were in that area?
Well, it depends on the time of year that I launch. I don't plan on going through the jet stream.
Good idea.
Are you riding it all the way down, or are you going to get out at some point?
No. I'm going to stay in the capsule. The capsule's... I'm staying...
Snug
inside the capsule unless it's the exactly. worst case scenario and I have to leave it. But the capsule will fall, and when it reaches a point of, for instance, the landing gear or the landing system consists of a drogue chute that will come out at about 50,000 feet and will slow my descent and stabilize, and then I have a landing parafoil similar to what a skydiver uses, which has a 3-to-1 glide ratio. So when I reach a certain point, let's say when I get to about 15,000 feet, if I'm more than so many miles off the mark, then I can open at a high enough altitude to glide back to that landing point.
That leads into my second question.
So if I'm at 15,000 feet and I'm only 2 miles to the west of the landing site, I will continue to fall to a lower altitude. Minimum opening altitude, though, would probably be probably around 8,000 to 10,000 feet, because that way, if the primary parachute system failed, there'd be plenty of time for the backup.
Boy, it sure would be impressive for the people on the ground if you can come nearly back to the launch point.
That would be sweet, awesome. Huh?
Yeah, sweet.
The goal is to come back and land in the same area where I took off. I mean, that's
right in front of the camera.
This has got to be done. You know, I'm not going to splash down somewhere, you know, 100 miles away and then show up.
Yeah.
I took off.
I understand. Caller?
What, are you going to take, you know, video and still shots going up and coming back? And maybe miking yourself?
Oh, I'm going to have complete telemetry. I plan on having anywhere from 6 to 8 video cameras.
Do you ever watch Fear Factor?
I've not really. I've come across it. I haven't.
Well, you should watch Fear Factor anyway. You should probably. In fact, you should be a contestant.
What I was thinking was
they have these helmets, you know.
Right. Helmet
and
cam.
And they have a helmet cam.
Right. Right.
And that I guess you're gonna have one of those.
Well, I'm gonna do is no. I plan on having probably anywhere from 6 to 8 cameras remotely mounted at different points in the rocket, and most of what I'm going to be relying upon as far as visuals, they're not going to come from windows, because I'll be on my back facing up, and the windows that I have, I won't be able to see out much of anything. I'm going to have a flat screen monitor in front of me. And
so you're really going to be depending on the video yourself.
Exactly, because what I'll be able to do, for instance, with 8 cameras, let's say, each one's going to be connected to its own digital recorder, because I want to record the entire flight from as many different perspectives as I can, because obviously afterwards that's going to be a wonderful prize to have is that video. and I can click to either one of those cameras at any time and see. So, for instance, if I'm on my way up and all of a sudden I've got some very strange thing going on, a buffeting or something, I can click to a camera and take an external view of a specific part of the rocket at any given time. But definitely going to record as much of this as possible.
So that if a fin were to lose integrity and fall off, you'd be able to see it?
For instance, something of that nature were to happen. And, for instance, when I launch, immediately at launch, there's a window of greatest exposures just within the first couple seconds. If the rocket were to lose stability immediately after launch and begin to arc over, then I've only got a certain amount of time to initiate the escape procedure, which is an explosive shutoff on the main engine. And then to separate the capsule from the fuel tank, I'm using they've got two basic things. There's six small rocket motors in the bottom of the capsule that develop 135 pounds of thrust each, and they'll fire. And at the same time, there's something very, very similar to like an automotive airbag.
And to not do that on time, you'd be driven into the earth like a steak knife into a turkey, wouldn't you?
Well, it depends how quickly after it left the launch tower. It would depend on how quickly it left the launch tower that would occur. Because every degree of...
But that certainly is that's a potential, right? In other words, if you didn't act at the right moment.
Yes, and there again, that's one of the reasons why the one thing I can do to ensure my survivability is having a tall launch tower. For instance, if I had a 400-foot tower and I accelerated at 4 Gs, I would come off that tower with enough momentum to carry me to 1,600 additional feet. So from a 400-foot tower...
Yeah, and that's a big safety margin.
That's a plenty good safety margin, because that means I'm going to come to a stop at 2,000 feet and then begin descending. The taller I build my launch tower, the greater potential
safety
I have of survivability, even under the most catastrophic of experiences.
Gotcha. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Hello.
Yes, I'm calling from near Phoenix, KFYI.
Yes, sir.
I have a question which might sound a little bit on the paranoid side, but I was just wondering of your guest, Brian, specifically, have you ever earlier on, before you became public with your plans that you're now publicizing, whether you were ever believing that you might have been under any type of surveillance regarding to any technological developments that you might have done earlier?
Well, I asked, but I bet the answer is no, because he said he's used off-the-shelf, essentially, technology, so...
Yeah, no, I'm not... I don't even think about that because, I don't claim to be any great genius or to be a know-it-all or to be doing anything other than just observing and learning and using the best of what's available.
Well, look, you're a successful inventor.
Yeah,
a leg up right there.
But my inventions are, they're toys. They're things that delight and entertain children, and it's not like I've gone out and invented any kind of serious technological
You could still potentially be entertaining.
Oh, I'm very interested.
Have you ever heard of the videotape called The Faces of Death?
No.
No, okay, well, you're probably better off not.
I try to avoid things like that.
But, I mean, you could be a new chapter.
A lot of people say, well, at least you won a Darwin Award. And it's like, well, no, I don't plan on getting a Darwin Award.
I don't think you would get it. Well, you might get listed, actually. You might get listed. But, because your effort is honestly, all joking aside, so serious, I wouldn't think the Darwin Award people would put you up. I really wouldn't. Even if you died.
Yeah. I look at it this way, that if I die doing this, and I say this not, of course, in trying to be prophetic in any way, but then, hey, that was my way of going. That was where I was meant to go.
That's right.
I mean,
all right, sir. Hold on, Brian, hold on.
Sure.
We'll take a break, and we'll all be right back. Stay there.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2002.
Pretty soon all my troubles will pass, cause I'm in sugar town.
had a dog that liked me some. Never had a friend or wanted one. So I just lay back and laugh at the sun. Cause I'm in shoo-shoo-shoo, shoo-shoo-shoo, shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-shoo-